Welcome back, everybody. This is a topic that is of great interest to me in my practice. For more than 50 years, scientists have warned about the risks of drinking alcohol in pregnancy. And recent research has found that mothers' consumption of as little as one drink a week may affect a child's brain development and their cognitive function and behavior. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about how children born with what we call fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, how they intersect with the legal system and what their what we should be doing about it and what kind of awareness we should be raising. Susan Shepherd Carlson is an attorney, and she is the chair of the Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder United, an organization that does raise awareness for and advocates for people living with condition. She's a former judge and a former first lady of Minnesota, and she's made children her priority throughout a really stellar career. Susan, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Oh, hi, Karen, and thank you for having me today and to discuss a topic that your audience may not know much about, but I think, unfortunately, it impacts us all.
It really does, and the more I read about it, the more I'm amazed that there is no greater awareness. So first of all, can you tell our listeners what fetal alcohol spectrum disorder is?
Sure. As you know, we all live in a world of acronyms. So FASD stands for Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorders. And they are a group of diagnosable medical conditions that can occur in a person who's exposed to alcohol before birth. Alcohol can interfere with the developing brain and other critical organs, which occur at any time during pregnancy. And the effects of this exposure are lifelong and can include certain mental health conditions, learning disabilities, attention disorders, cognitive thinking skills, problems with memory, sensory issues such as high sensitivity or unresponsiveness to light, sounds, textures, or smells, a tendency to become easily overwhelmed in cloudy or noisy environments, a tendency to seek out or avoid intense sensory experiences, and physical manifestations, but I think we overlook this a lot of times in our field, such as heart defects, hearing and visual impairments, and more, all depending on the amount of exposure and what is developing during pregnancy.
Susan, is autism sometimes confused with this spectrum disorder, or is there a subset? Is this a subset of autism?
Well, I think that's a very interesting question, because autism gets much more funding from the federal government and much more visibility. And many of the youth that we see get an autism diagnosis because there are services for those with autism. So some overlap, but there's lots of trainings on what are the differences and the commonalities.
Susan, let's talk about that. And this is stunning. How common is fetal alcohol spectrum disorder in children in the United States?
Well, I think it's shocking to most people.
Yes,
and we just found there was a prevalence study where they actually went in and over four regions in the country and looked at first graders and did a prevalence study. And that study came back and was published in the General American Medical Association and had it 1 in 20, or 5% of the population. And these are first graders in four regions. And I think what's interesting that the only two had had a previous diagnosis. And it was a lot of it was driven by binge drinking during the first trimester, late recognition of pregnancy, which I found very interesting. And they had been diagnosed with other things such as ADHD or autism.
I mean, it has to be one of the most common developmental disabilities in all. I mean, if it's 1 in 20 children, and then, you know, if that's accurate. And I mean, that to me is stunning. And so to me, we have to understand this in children and in adults, because when the legal system intersects with these people, there could be issues. And that's kind of what I want to focus on a little bit, as well as where people can get help. Before I get to that, Susan, I don't know how to say this, but is there a stigma here? Is there some idea that women who may have had alcohol during their pregnancy, they do not want to identify this developmental problem because they feel some sort of guilt or shame regarding their consumption of alcohol?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that is what has happened in this field. I think we've done a good job of educating that there really should not be alcohol use during pregnancy. And what we found in a lot of the studies, as I mentioned, that a lot of this occurs before recognition of pregnancy. And once women find out that they're pregnant, they don't drink. And so there's that guilt. And so our systems of care don't want, generally, they'll try to find something else rather than blaming it on the alcohol. And I do think that we in the justice field have been sort of guilty with creating that stigma ourselves, because we're out there ringing the bell, saying, oh, we need to do something about this. And then people start to think, oh, my child's going to, end up in the juvenile delinquency system.
So right, right.
There's a lot of stigma attached to this disability, and we really have to get away from that.
And how can you tell if a child has fetal alcohol spectrum disorder? And I made the mistake of assuming that there are, we hear about a certain look with the eyes have a different kind of a downward, their lids are different, and, their face is flatter, yeah. And there's, the lip is kind of thin. But that's not always the case. There's not always a physical look to a child who has FASD.
That's absolutely true. It's only about 10%, and so the rest, 90%, don't have any that physical features. And so, no, you really need to have a diagnosis. Now, you can, I think, and it varies by age, what you would look for in a child that has FASD. But if you know that there's known or suspected prenatal alcohol exposure, intellectual and behavioral signs could include problems with memory, judgment or impulse control, motor skills, academics, especially in math, paying attention, and certain learning disabilities. They could be unfocused, easily distracted, forgetting how to do something they did before. So those are some of the signs that you would look for.
Before we take a break, I want to get to the mm-hmm. issue of the legal system and FASD. Mm-hmm. And studies have mm-hmm. shown, from my study looking at this, that 60% of adolescents and adults with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder had reported interface with the legal system in some way or another. And 35% reported having been incarcerated for a crime. And we're not here to say that if you have this disorder, you're a criminal. That's not what we're saying. In fact, people with disorders and mental disabilities are usually more often the victim of crimes rather than perpetrators. But can you tell our listeners just basically how kids and adults with FASD end up in the legal system?
And I think that's an excellent question. We really don't know how many of the population, because obviously we're not identifying it. But, and the 60% was a cohort of individuals that had been studied over a length of time. But through my experience in juvenile court, and that's how I got involved in the system many years ago, over 2.5 decades ago, I think they encountered the justice system due to their cognitive and behavioral impairments. They may function significantly below their chronicle age emotionally, intellectually, behaviorally. And I think their high degree of impulsivity, and that a lot of times gets them into trouble with the law. And they maybe have more likelihood of acting without recognition of the consequences of their poor decision-making and their failure to link initial act to subsequent consequences or damage. And I think their impulses, I think that's a huge factor, their inability to consider, they just impulse, get their, they see something and they take it and they don't understand that, that's wrong.
And I would imagine, too, from what I have seen in my family law practice, is that there's some suggestibility issues where they're a little bit open to, suggestibility. So if someone wanted to do something and take advantage of the person, it would be a little bit easier.
Oh, absolutely. Usually, and this is, you know, we're just talking, you know, my observations in the courtroom. They would not be the perpetrator. They would be the one that would go along with it, though.
Right. Right. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Let's take a break. And we're here talking to Susan Shepherd Carlson. She's an attorney and she's chair of the Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder United, which is an organization that raises awareness and advocates for people with this condition. She's a former judge and former First Lady of Minnesota, and we're very happy to have her with us. Let's take a break and we'll be back in a minute on WGN. We are talking with Susan Shepherd Carlson, who is the chair of the Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder United organization. Susan, thank you so much for joining us. You know, I wanted to mention that our former DuPage County State's Attorney, Joe Burkett, a very well-respected man in our legal community, who adopted a child with FASD, publicly called for the Illinois justice system to adopt some policies and procedures to identify and respond to those in the system with FASD. So this is something that has been discussed in Illinois and has been an issue in Illinois, but I don't think it has reached the level of awareness that it should have. Susan, let's talk a little bit more about how you see the fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, how the courts and the families and teachers and the whole social system should be able to recognize this and deal with it.
Well, that's an excellent question. And we actually did that in Hennepin County, Minnesota, when I was a judge. We got some funding from the FASD Center for Excellence that was in existence at the time, and we actually screened for FASD, and we had funding for about 4 years, and I think it came up about 35% of the ones that we screened ended up with the diagnosis. And we also, but at the same time, it doesn't do any good just to screen and identify. You've got to make sure that those in the system begin to understand what the disability is, because that, to me, is the key to their success. And what we did was we educated their caregivers, the probation officers, the judges, those service providers about FASD, and used a different approach in a more of a strength-based approach and changing the dynamic rather than trying to change the kid, you change the environment. So just beginning to understand what their disability was a huge factor. You know, one of the things I noticed when I was a juvenile court judge is that we would do that when a youth with autism would come into the court. It wouldn't be as criminalized as someone with an unrecognized FASD. So that was how you changed that dynamic. And the results, although not, they were small at the time, I think these kids had better probation results, better school results, better relationships with their families and caregivers. So that's what the systems really need to do. And I totally agree with your DuPage County State Attorney that we have to begin to identify and respond, because I think this is the population that we're just totally missing the boat on, and that's why they keep circulating through our system.
Absolutely. And you sat on the bench. You sat in juvenile court. And juvenile court is, if it's anything like our juvenile court in Illinois, which I'm sure it is that you're looking to save these kids. You're not looking to put them in prison for the rest of their lives. In fact, you probably can't do that. So you're trying to look at creative solutions to deal with them and to get them to be productive members of society. And I think that all the tools that you can use in that role are important. So, you know, when you look, you know, again, and this is a hard question to ask, but, you know, and it's a question that has to do with a lot of different things. How much do you say this child intersected with the legal world here because of the FASD? And how much do you discount that and say, I'm going to cut the kid a break because he couldn't help it? Or, you know, or is it like he's still dangerous because he did something bad and you still have to look at the act and not the reason for it? How do you parse that as a judge, and how should we be parsing that?
Well, I think particularly in the juvenile justice system, you really want to do what will keep that child from becoming a repeat offender, right?
Right.
And so you want to have what you order and what the system is going to respond to that child to be appropriate for their needs. And sometimes there's naughty behaviors, right? And sometimes there's behaviors that relate directly to their disability. And a lot of times the FASD evaluation can sort that out. But I think it's the results that we want. And I know we don't have a lot of time to go into it, but I had a young man who came in, and the probation officer was at WIT then. This kid had been off-the-wall behavior, and he was in out-of-home placement, and he didn't know what to do. So we did an evaluation and ended up sending him to a group home that had been educated on FASD. This kid ended up getting his GED and completely changing his life around because they understood his brain-based disability. And that's what you want. I mean, I think that's what you would like to have. I know there needs to be accountability, but it has to be accountability that will solve this. Otherwise, they'll just keep circulating through,
right,
the system.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we don't have a whole lot of time, but I want to talk about an act that has been proposed, the FASD Respect Act. Can you just tell us briefly about this act and where it is in the system of being passed and what it provides?
Oh, absolutely. And I've been working on this for two Congresses, and we've had advocates, families, professional advocating for it. It's a reauthorization of FASD programs on the national level. And what it does is it brings back the FASD Center for Excellence, but it also provides funding to states to begin to look at their systems of care and how FASD can be put into their systems of care, be it education, justice, school behaviors, whatever it is. If we put FASD, because there's a lot of funding, right, that's going into states from the federal government relating to mental health, behavioral health, and it's not FASD informed. So that's what it is. Currently, we're in an election year, so Congress is off doing what they do, and it's in another bill, and it's on the floor of the Senate. It's a mental health bill, and we've been told that hopefully they're going to bring it up after the election, what we call the lame duck session. So we'd love to have your listeners get involved with our organization, FASDUnited.org. They can get involved and help us bring this across the finish line, because I think it's going to make a huge difference. We need to have a national agenda and national focus on this problem, or we'll continue. We can't train ourselves out of it. We have to have systemic change.
I think this is really, really an important message. And can you give out the contact information just of any organization? If there's a parent out there who thinks maybe their child has this disorder and wants to be tested, or if you want to be an advocate for this cause, give us whatever information you think we should have, Susan.
Oh, absolutely. And our organization is the national organization, FASDUnited.org again. And we have family navigators, and they will help anyone who calls to provide information in any state of the union. So please have them. And that's how we find out what's going around the country and where the challenges are and what's needed across the country. So it's FASDUnited.org.
Susan Shepherd Carlson, thank you so much for taking some time on this afternoon. And I have to ask you a quick question. Do you know Tim Wahl, since you were a first lady in Minnesota?
Actually, I do. And fortuitously, we had a conversation about FASD, and he was a teacher.
Yes.
He told me on the reservation in Pine Ridge of a classroom with youth with FASD and suspected FASD. So if he is elected, we'll have a friend in vice president. So.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Well, yeah. Susan, thank you for joining me, and we'll come back again soon when you pass this law, and we can congratulate you on it. Take care.
Well, yeah, thank you, Karen, for bringing this up. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Take care.